Welcome to the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Kennedy, and you tune in today because you're sick of trying every fad diet under the sun and training yourself into the ground without seeing any results. That's why I'm here, to share the most effective ways to eat and train for sustainable and real results.
What's up, legends? Welcome back to this week's episode of the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. Got an absolute cracker of a show for you today. I was very fortunate enough to sit down with a very successful and young entrepreneur, Sarah Holloway. We had a great chat. There's a lot of positivity. There's a lot of value in today's show. And the chat was a little longer than usual, which is good. I had a great time, a lot of fun, and I know you're going to take a lot of value from it. So if you do, please do take a screenshot and post it up on your Instagram story. Tag myself, tag Sarah. We'd love to get some feedback. But for now, let's get stuck straight into our chat.
All right, Sarah, firstly, just wanted to say a big thanks for coming on the show today. I've been looking forward to this. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, me too. Thank you so much. And what an honor to be on the number one on the health chart.
Oh, it was great. It was great. So to the listeners, thank you very much for tuning in. And whoever shared the episode last week and recently, massive thank you to you. But let's get stuck into the episode. I don't want to talk about me anymore. So I want to start off today's episode with letting the listeners find out a little bit more about yourself. So you started off, I guess, before Matcha, which we'll get into. You're at Monash studying law and arts.
Yep.
And then you kind of started your career as a lawyer, I believe.
I did.
So do you want to give us a bit of a run through with, well, you know, your educational background up until that point and before you kind of finished up your career in law?
Yeah, for sure. So I always thought I wanted to be a lawyer. I pretty much decided at school. I mean, I was super, super naughty at school. Yeah. But eventually I settled down on time around year 12 and was like, I need to need to pick a career. And I think law is something that, for someone who has lots of interests, I'm like equal parts nerd burger and arty farty. And for someone who didn't really know what to do with that, I thought law was a great start because, you know, you can do anything with it. You don't have to be a lawyer. You can do politics. You can travel. You can be a diplomat. So yeah, I studied really hard in year 12 to get into law at Monash. And then because, you know, my nerdy side was getting law, I was like, my arty side needs something else to buffer that out. Yeah. It's a long degree. So I did arts and I did languages. So cool. I love studying languages and traveling. And I did majored in French and double minored in Japanese and Chinese.
Awesome.
Which was awesome and allowed for lots of exchanges, lots of travel and getting to see the world and on the university's pocket, which was great. And then in law, you pretty much have to start building up towards your job. You know, in like second year, you start doing internships and leading up towards getting a grad position. You know, I locked my job in, I think, in fourth year, which meant fifth year was pretty chill.
Okay.
And I got into a top-tier commercial law firm called King & Wood Mallesons, which has offices all around the world and was a really, really great place to start my career. Even though I didn't end up doing law, I learned so much about business and markets and, you know, the world, how business works in the world. And I was in M&A, so learning a lot about the share market and stuff that and structuring companies and stuff that's since been pretty useful, which I didn't know at the time. So I spent 3 years there. And actually thought I would end up there. I mean, I thought eventually I would want to branch out into something else, but had no idea it was coming so soon.
Yeah. So how long had you been in law, like working in law after uni, before you made the change, which we'll chat about in a sec?
I think it was in my third year that I left. So I did a year and a half as a grad is the grad program. And then I got qualified and became a proper lawyer and then did another year and a half. But it was 6 months before I left that we started the business as a happy accident. So my partner Nick, my fiance now.
Upgraded.
We went to Rwanda in Africa to do a charitable expedition with one of the companies that he'd been supporting called YGAP.
Yep.
And we went to one of the schools that they'd helped build, and I was teaching a bit of English because I speak French and their language is French, and we were building classrooms and it was absolutely amazing. But I lost about 15 kilos when I got a parasite, and I'm like quite slender, so it was, you know, first 5 kilos was like woo, and then the next 10 were not fun.
Okay, you can imagine.
Yeah, came home And, you know, typical A-type personality, went straight back to the law firm, didn't take a break, didn't listen to my body, and I just kept crashing and burning. Ended up with adrenal fatigue and was told I couldn't drink coffee anymore because it, you know, it's really hard on your body.
Yeah.
I'd get panic attacks and, like, start shaking because it was just too intense. And I was, like, 42 kilos, so it was just too much anyway.
It's insane, yeah.
And then I got sent to the firm's headquarters in Hong Kong.
Yep.
And discovered this magical matcha powder.
Yeah, okay.
Which is basically just green tea leaves ground into a powdered form. So instead of throwing out the leaf, you drink it.
Okay.
Which means you get 137 times the antioxidants of regular green tea. And it's also got a good hit of caffeine. So I think it's just over half the caffeine of a cup of coffee.
Of a cup of coffee, yep.
But it's got, like all tea does, an amino acid in it called L-theanine, which makes it slow release into the bloodstream, so you don't get...
It's not as much of that big hit.
Yeah, you don't get the crash and the jitters, and my body could tolerate it, but I'd still get a good amount of energy, so I was like, this is a miracle! And Nick got hooked, and he was replacing his pre- and post-workout coffees with matcha. And then we came home and couldn't find it anywhere. And we're like, oh, this is weird. It's been around for centuries.
Yeah.
Why is it not accessible?
You hadn't come across it before you went over? Or you hadn't really...
I had.
Oh, you had? Yeah.
So in Japan, it's Japanese.
Yeah.
It's a really big part of their culture, more in a traditional ceremonial way. So they have a tea ceremony and you use a whisk. There's like really careful choreography of how it all happens. And it's a very big tradition in Japanese culture, but not sort of an everyday accessible use style thing. And that was what I thought was missing. I was like, it's awesome that it's, you know, this unique Japanese cultural thing, but in daily life it could be amazing for people like me who need healthier caffeination. And the health food market's booming and everyone loves green powders, so why isn't someone onto this? And so Nick and I went online and we were trying to find some for ourselves, and you could only buy 10 kilos at a time, which now seems like nothing, but at the time was like a pallet. Like, it was so much for just two people. And so we were like, screw it, let's just like try and sell a bag, and I can put on my LinkedIn that I'm an entrepreneur and then go back to the firm and continue my happy little life, and that's it.
Right, so it started as a bit of a side hustle almost.
Totally. Yeah. And not even a hustle, like more just a hobby.
Hobby, okay.
Didn't even think we'd sell any.
Did that initially start out, like, was it called Matcha Maiden? Is that where you started out, or was that once you kind of took that step and left the law firm that you...
No, it was called Matcha Maiden from the start. So we were still in Hong Kong at the time, and I literally sat up in the middle of the night. I was like, Nick, it's going to be called Matcha Maiden. I have no idea why. I just thought it would be cool for it to be alliterated, and then it's kind of catchy, but also it's like a personification, you know, Matcha Maiden's a person.
Yeah.
So then she could speak to the audience, and, you know, Nick's got a creative agency, so he's all into the branding and marketing and development. And
makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and he was like, that speaks to the audience, that's amazing. And then we were at a cafe, I think I've still got it on a serviette. We drew the first logo and like all the first concepts.
That's super cool.
And then we got graphic designers to mock everything up, and we ended up coming back to the one that we drew on the serviette. So that was our first. I'll show you a photo later. The first labels were so ugly, but you know, they lasted us for the first year and a half. So yeah, we just started, and I think, you know, we were talking just before we started recording about the fact that done is better than perfect, you know.
Yeah, 100%.
We wait for the perfect moment, but it never comes. It's you don't even know what's perfect until you test it on the market. So.
Yeah, and if you're waiting for perfect, it's just not going to happen, is it? You're never going to start.
Yeah.
And if, like you said, there really is no such thing as perfect. Even when you talk to the people in any field that are at the top of their game, they know that they've always got something that they're working on. From the outside in, you may look at it and go, oh, that's perfect. But there's always something that can be done.
Totally. And also, the world's changing so quickly these days that what's perfect 1 minute, like 5 minutes later, everything's changed and you've got to adapt it again. So if you're waiting for that moment, then 5 minutes later, a competitor will have updated, you know, come in and undercut you, or there's just no better time than now.
Let's talk about the mindset from the big career change. So obviously, it's a completely different ends of the spectrum. So going from the commercial law to then running a business in Matcha Maiden. So when did you make that decision, and how was your mindset around basically kind of dropping what you'd studied all that time for and taking a bit of a leap of faith with the matcha stuff?
Yeah, it was a really hard decision at the time. In hindsight, I'm like, oh, obviously that was, of course I was going to do it. But at the time it was, you know, I'd studied my whole life, and I was even though I was learning all the time in law, it was still my comfort zone. Like, I'd still been equipped for that.
Yeah.
I'd done so much training. I'd, you know, positioned myself to be a lawyer. So everything in that world was familiar. Whereas business and food and freight and online e-commerce, I had no experience whatsoever.
Yeah.
So what I think is important to remind people is I stayed for 6 months before I left,
yeah,
just to give it some legs, see if it actually was going to be viable. You know, we needed capital as well, so my wage was really important. And it gave us 6 months to grow up to the point of being able to,
yeah,
you know, help me go full time. Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, we get so excited about leaving our job that you can, it's possible to do it too early. So it's good,
definitely,
to give yourself a little bit of time doing both to ease into it. And I didn't leave until we got a big contract with Urban Outfitters, which,
okay,
is the fashion giant in the US.
Yep.
And they ordered enough that, you know, we needed for someone full time to pack it. We were still packing it ourselves.
Right,
it was,
yep,
like Breaking Bad, but green. You know, there was powder everywhere and we were packing at midnight when I finished work. And it wasn't until we needed someone full time and it was inevitable that we had to hire someone,
yep,
that it made sense.
Made sense,
like,
yeah.
You know, we didn't have that much work at the beginning.
Yeah.
I would have just been sitting there twiddling my thumbs. But once we got to the point where it was either or, it became mutually exclusive, I couldn't do both, I was like, this is the time.
Yeah, it just felt right.
And, yeah, and two big things happened. The first that I love talking about is the self-doubt that happens when you,
yeah,
when you move out of your comfort zone. You just start to think, oh my God, it's never going to work. It's,
yeah,
going to,
yeah,
fail. You think of all the obstacles. We're so, like, reluctant to put ourselves out there in case we fail and look silly.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much that goes on in your brain that's negative self-talk. So that was a big thing of, like, having to get through that mindset stuff of just, like, don't listen to it. It's
constantly
not right.
Thinking about the negatives, yeah.
Yeah, and that, of course, like, you're thinking about the risks and you're thinking about all the bad stuff, but you need to surround yourself with the people who are going to get you through that and,
yeah,
and re-convince you that you're doing a great thing and that, you know, you can change the world. If people around you believe in that, you can actually believe in that. But if people around you are trying to bring you down or are really risk-averse, then it's going to be harder. So.
Yeah, well, that was actually pretty much hit the nail on the head with the question I was going to ask next. So, I talk a lot about surrounding yourself with people that are going to bring you up or people that are doing better than you or people that actually believe in what you want to do, and not surrounding yourself with the opposite. So what was there someone apart from Nick, was there certain people that did have a big influence on the decision to make that leap or that were there for you in those stages where you were kind of doubting yourself or,
yeah,
doubting whether or not it would work?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think it was a really conscious choice. I always say you're the sum of the five people you spend the most time with.
Yeah, I love that.
And at the time it was law people, which,
yeah,
of course is amazing when you're building up for a law career, but we're trained to be really risk averse. We're trained,
yeah,
to not take risks and to highlight the possible obstacles, which is a great skill, but I had to distance myself from those people when I was first pitching the idea and surround myself with, obviously, Nick, who's a serial entrepreneur, so he was very much like, go for it. Like,
yeah,
let's just roll with this and see what happens. My parents, not being conservative, you know, that,
yeah,
really helped because,
yeah,
I know a lot of people
that is a big help. Yeah.
Battle family,
yeah,
thinking, oh, you're leaving law. Like, oh my God. But my parents were really, really supportive because I think they know that if they resist my dreams, you know, I'm going to do it anyway. So that,
yeah,
might as well,
yeah, yeah,
have me on board. and also turning to other people who had done it before.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest thing that you can do is people who are living examples that you can do it with no experience or with no capital or, you know,
yeah,
you can grow from the beginning. That's a permanent example in your face that it's possible.
Yeah.
And that influence is immeasurable. So, like,
and that's it. Like, it's all well and good. Like, I don't get me wrong, I think it's great to surround yourself with the people that are telling you that you can do stuff, but there is a difference between someone that has no idea about what you're doing saying, yeah, yeah, you can do it,
yeah,
and actually having someone that's done it before and they can almost tell you, like, guide you through the path of doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like, Mum, it was so amazing in that she helped me. You know, she's really given me a mindset since I was little that make the decisions based on what is the one thing you'll never be able to do again. I'll,
yeah,
always be able to do law,
yeah,
but I would never. It was the one time where no one else had done matcha. We'd never,
yeah,
be the first to market again. The world is ripe for e-commerce businesses launching off social media. You know, that,
yeah,
might not last,
yeah, yeah,
forever.
Yeah.
So she was great in that regard. But I also was like, Mum would support me no matter what I did.
Yeah.
So I need someone who is actually going to tell me if it's viable,
yeah,
or,
yeah,
not.
Yeah.
So, you know, the girls at Frank Body we were,
okay,
friends with.
Cool.
And they helped enormously because they were just like, we did it. We didn't know what we're doing. Like, you can do it, and these are the things you need to look out for. Freight, insurance, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, one of my dear friends, Nat from Green Street Juice, she was the same. She'd started about a year before us, and she was like, I... also an ex-lawyer, also left her job, and also was like, I'm doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
You can do it.
And I actually talked about this on an episode a few weeks ago with Brad Lee. We were talking about a client of mine who has a business that she's just launching now, and she was kind of in the same boat as what we were talking about, how she wanted everything to be perfect and was kind of worried about whether or not people would buy it. And I kind of said to her, I was like, what is the worst case scenario? Like, very worst case scenario. And her answer was that people wouldn't have her product. And then I'm talking to Brad and I'm telling him this, and he's just like, well, worst case scenario has already happened because you haven't launched, you haven't taken that leap. And, you know, if that's the worst case, that someone's not going to buy your product or it's not going to work,
that's not a so bad much thing.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing.
Yeah, totally.
You know, there's obviously ways to manipulate and change the way you went about it in the first place, or you could have just gone back to what you were doing before.
Exactly.
Instead... you know, the opposite of that is you actually took the leap and now look where it's at.
I know, which is why another thing I always say about the self-doubt piece is doubt kills more dreams than failure ever will, because doubt is the thing that makes you fail. But if you do it, you probably won't fail. Like, you know, we're so capable of the things that we never thought we were capable of, but you just have to give yourself the chance because, you know, when I first started, there's no way I thought we'd be doing what we're doing now.
Yeah, yeah.
But... it doesn't matter. Like, you know, I would never have known that if I didn't start. And I think, like, it's just so important to get out of your own head. And I think Oprah said, you get in life what you have the courage to ask for. And if you don't ask, if you don't ask, the universe will put it out there. It's a no. So you already failed.
100%. And even something as simple as doing the opposite of what our brain wants us to do straight away and actually writing down or even just thinking about all the positives that could come from it.
Yeah.
And getting fixated on that instead of the negatives, because, you know, I was listening to someone talk the other day, and I'm the worst at remembering quotes or anything like that. So if you listen to the Summer Fat Loss episode the other week, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. But they said something along the lines of, it's very hard to change a made up mind.
Totally. That's
so
such
your
a good
mind,
one.
If your mind is made up on the fact that it is going to be successful, that there are going to be so many positives that come from it, it's so hard to change someone's mind when it's made up.
Yeah.
And it seems simple and it seems like it wouldn't make much of a difference, but it does. Like, you're constantly, you know, got those affirmations of knowing that, or thinking that you're going to do well, or thinking that it's going to succeed. It's very hard to change that.
Yeah, totally. I think you can't live a positive life with a negative mind. So if you're always thinking negative thoughts or concentrating on those negatives, which exist, and it is important to think about the risks, but they just can't be the first thing you think about, and they can't dominate the decision.
Yeah.
You need the positives because it's, you know, and you need people around you. It's hard to, you know, blow your own horn, I think. Like, it's just not a natural self thing. So you need to surround yourself with people who think you're awesome. I mean, for us. Yeah. But, having people around you who are just going to remind you how awesome you are and how capable you are and point out all the times you've come through adversity in the past, you know, that's amazing. That makes so much difference.
That's awesome. And, you know, you just briefly touched on where you are at today. So obviously in that process, you've opened up Match and Milk Bar.
Yeah.
Which is very, very exciting. How's that all going?
Amazing. Yeah? Another really happy accident. So that was about a year into Match and Maiden. And we'd grown, you know, so quickly that first year we've got a warehouse in LA and Melbourne. We've got 1,500 stockers around the world. You know, we were getting into the hands of like Victoria's Secret Angels and stuff. It was just going so well, but never, ever thought of a physical venue. And again, I have no hospitality experience. So it was like not on the cards. Yeah. But we were traveling in LA with our business partner and we were looking at all the trends we were looking at beverages. He was looking at food because he's in hospitality. And we were just like, oh my God, no one's joined plant-based eating and matcha drinking, which are the two biggest trends in the US. No one's made them, you know, no one's joined them in a concept and then made it appealing to non-vegans and non-matcha drinkers, you know. No one's made it cool and no one's made it appealing and taken away all that stigma and stuff. So it kind of started as a pop-up idea.
Yeah.
Again, I think when you first start out, everything is overwhelming. So the best thing you can do to quell the self-doubt is just to, like, make your goal manageable by like kind of making it a bit smaller it seems achievable. Yeah. So we were like, let's do a pop-up, like 3 months. Yeah. That's not as overwhelming as opening what we ended up opening. And yeah, we thought, let's make it like based on the blue zone. So that was the research we uncovered that was the five areas of the world where people live the longest. And one of the main things they have in common is plant-based eating. So they're not vegan. They do eat some meat, but mostly what's in those small geographical areas is plants.
Okay.
And they live like remarkably longer than anywhere else.
Yeah.
And then the one that has the area that has the most 100-year-olds is Okinawa in Japan, and they drink a lot of matcha.
Okay.
So we were like, why don't we do a cafe that's about living longer?
Yeah.
Not animal cruelty, not anything that makes you think, vegans, you know, everyone wants to live longer and everyone wants the planet to live longer. So let's make it about that. Let's make it cool. Let's get some like cool people in. Let's make it Instagrammable and then just see how it goes.
That's awesome.
And yeah, we launched 3 years ago now, which in the cafe scene, I think 3 years is a pretty good stint.
Yeah, and it is awesome. I've been down a number of times and it's a great vibe there and awesome,
And, you know, we had Chris Hemsworth was interviewed by the New York Times and asked what his favourite thing about Australia was, and he was like, oh, the city and matcha milk bar. And we were like,
That's awesome.
Thanks, Thor.
That's so cool.
Yeah, and like, you know, we obviously, if you aim for that, like, it's so scary and overwhelming. Sometimes you need to, like, downgrade the dream just to make the immediate steps more achievable and then let yourself see what happens.
Yeah, something that I talk about a lot is just doing the small things consistently well.
Yes.
They lead to such bigger things. But when you are constantly fixated on that major goal or that thing that does seem a bit too far, it almost paralyzes you to the point where you're not even doing the small things well anymore.
Totally.
So it's not going to happen. But if you kind of don't focus as much on that and just focus on all the little things, it all adds up. So for those that are listening by now, if you didn't know who Sarah was, it's very likely that you'll understand that she's extremely busy and you've got a lot on your plate. So you know, for someone like yourself, productivity is obviously extremely important. So do you have a morning routine or ritual that you like to follow? It's a question I tend to ask a lot of guests on the show.
I do. I always find this so interesting hearing how people start their day. I think my favorite thing, which most people who know me will know already, is going out for breakfast. And I know it's like the most indulgent thing ever when you can, you know, make your own breakfast really easily. Breakfast food is one of those things that is quite accessible to make at home. But since moving from a really structured office environment to just working from anywhere, anytime, you know, it's kind of overwhelming when you first get into business and you don't have anyone telling you where to be, what time. And, you know, if you don't leave your house and you work from home, it's hard to be productive.
It is,
so over the course of like learning how to be an entrepreneur or funtrepreneur, as I say, I've realized the best thing I can do is get up, go out of the house, like get changed, go and sit in a cafe, do all my emails before I have to talk to anyone. Cause that's generally the most overwhelming thing is figuring out what your day looks like. And it looks different every day.
Yeah.
And I love cafes. I love going out for breakfast. I love food. It's just like my little thing that I do for myself that starts the day off. I get really good fuel.
Yeah.
I sort of, you know, can orientate myself in the day. I get a little bit of time to myself and it just makes me happy.
Yeah.
Like, I think I got a little bit distracted when we first started from actual joy. Like, it was just hustle, 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 goals.
It's hard to not get in that, stuck in that rut. Yeah.
And like the rut of wanting to be too productive.
Yeah. To the point where you are paralyzing
yourself. Yeah. Well, you're not productive. Yeah. So I realized I need brekkie out. You know, I felt guilty for the first few years, but I'm like, I'm not a big shopper. I don't buy shoes and bags.
Yeah.
I'm not like normal girls. I don't go out. We don't drink and go out.
Yeah.
So spending money on brekkie and starting my day, it sets me up well. And like the rest of the day always is good when I do that.
That's awesome. Yeah. One of my favorite parts about spending a bit of time in the States, so the last few years I've been trying to extend the trip there and get as much done as I can work-wise and training and stuff. And every day, same thing. I'll start at a cafe and go and grab a coffee, headphones in, get the emails done. And even just getting your emails done or writing a blog or an email or whatever it may be in the morning, like, it doesn't seem like much, but it puts you in that productive state for the rest of the day. Like, you leave there, it's still relatively early, you're feeling good about yourself, and then that sets you up to actually be more productive throughout the rest of the day.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the other part of being productive, I feel anyway, is staying active and being healthy, which by the sounds of it, you have no issue with. So how important what's the importance, do you think, of staying active and healthy in terms of of being productive and I guess successful as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, it's so crucial. I think, again, in that first year of going from having a defined lunch break and it being really easy to fit in workouts and structure, you know, routine kind of keeps you going. The first year I didn't spend enough time on exercising and fitness, and I thought, you know, I'm not wasting time. That's great. I'm not going to the gym. I'm like, actually just work. And it just doesn't do anything for you. Like, you get sluggish. There's so many benefits to exercise for not just like physically feeling good in your physical fitness, but also I have, like I've spoken about it before, quite crippling anxiety at times. And the best thing you can do for your mental health too is exercise.
Yeah.
Like, it just gets 100%. All the blood flowing. It, you know, really gets those endorphins going. It regulates your hormones. It regulates your hunger. Like, everything is better when you exercise and are fit and active and outside too.
Yeah.
I try to get outside, walk the dog. I also like to keep, so I used to be a ballerina, which meant that exercise was quite incidental. So it took me a little while to figure out how to exercise on purpose.
Okay, yeah.
But now I do a bit of everything, do a bit of F45 for cardio, which I used to hate, but I love cardio now.
Yeah.
But also do some strength in the gym.
Yeah.
I never used to lift weights either, but I now appreciate each different form of exercise for the different function that it does.
It serves its purpose,
Yoga
and
Pilates.
We're going to get you in this week. Some strength stuff.
Got to do a DK sesh.
Yeah, for sure.
That's probably not my strong point, but, you know, slowly increasing the weights.
Yeah, good.
Yoga and Pilates I do more for the mental effect, I think, but also for, like, core conditioning and flexibility is a really big thing.
Yeah, it's huge, yeah.
I think I went too hard on cardio and strength for a little while and my muscles just started to, like...
Seize up.
And,
that mobility side of things is so important.
Yeah, and so as we're getting older as well, you know, when you're younger, you don't notice because you're still, like, so bendy and stuff. But as I'm, you know, I'm like, oh, I need to keep my joints happy as well. And, and then just walks. I just find, like, we're right near Albert Park at the moment. I find that 5Ks is such a beautiful view and passes really quickly. And just walking makes you feel, it calms. It's, I think there's, I don't remember what the study is, but there's a lot of research into the benefits of just walking on, like, regulating your heart rate and, like, helping.
I absolutely love walking and listening to podcasts. So on the weekends, if I've got, you know, if I don't have work or whatever it may be and it's nice weather, there's nothing better than just getting a coffee, going for a walk and listening to a podcast. And and we're lucky, especially around the area that we're in here, like you said, with the beach and stuff like that, you tend to just forget about it and not take advantage of it.
Yeah, and I also have loved recently, I used to be very, you know, when you're first getting back into a habit, when I first was figuring out how to fit exercise into my schedule, I had to be really routine to make sure I didn't just drop off the bandwagon really quickly. And so I'd get really fixated. I'd be like, Monday's at F45, Tuesday's at gym, Wednesday's yoga, blah, blah, blah. But now I've just gone back to listening to my body.
Yep.
And you really do need different things at different times. And
100%.
Particularly for women, we have, you know, our monthly cycle. You need really intense things at some time, but sometimes you just can't. That's just going
to
not...
Yeah, need to back it off a little bit. And,
yeah, that'll be worse for you than...
Yeah, sometimes less is more, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So trying to get that balance, you know, it's something we all struggle with. I'd love to say I've got the perfect balance, and I'm definitely better at downtime, a good mix of downtime, work time, and exercise. But still, you know.
No, I'm shocking at it.
Yeah, but yeah, exactly.
I talk about it all the time, but and I say this a lot as well, that, like, I'm very bad at, like, something I need to get a lot better at is actually taking downtime and in the downtime actually taking downtime and not still thinking about stuff that needs to be done or checking emails or whatever it may be, but it is so important.
Yeah.
And once you can, like you said, like, even I'm still very shit at it, but initially, like, I was way worse. So even now, like, it's made a massive difference being able, like, I talk about this a bit, is that I've started meditating over the past 2 years daily.
Amazing.
Which before that, I would be the very last person that
you would expect
to do
it. That, yeah.
But even that, like, 5 to 10 minutes a day has made such a difference. Being able to just try and switch off, even if you're just switched off for a couple of seconds.
It's still
better than nothing. How much of a difference it makes.
Yeah, yeah. I do 20 minutes twice a day. So I did my Vedic meditation course at the start of the year because I was too sporadic, like I have to commit to something and train and learn to do it properly, and that has changed my life. Like, the best ideas I've had for the businesses, the podcast that I started recently called Seize the Air, I've joined the podcast family. That all came out of downtime. Like, you can't I haven't had a good idea outside of downtime in years.
Yeah,
because you just, until you give yourself space and perspective and get out of your environment, I also find like going away physically helps to get some distance. Until you give your brain some time to just like chill the fuck out. Oh, sorry. I swore.
No, it's all right. I swear all the time.
Yeah, okay, good. Yeah. Otherwise, you just get too wound up in the day-to-day and the nitty-gritty details and running a business. You're passionate about it. I thought, oh, I'm leaving law to be in wellness and health. I'm going to be so healthy. But it's worse.
It can be very unhealthy.
Yeah, because you're so passionate. You don't have any incentive.
I'm the type of person who... I was talking to someone about this the other day. Like, I kind of, like, feed off chaos a little bit. Like, like I like to be up and just, like, bang, bang, bang the whole day. And even though it seems like it's... it seems like you're not... How do I say it? Like, it seems like it's not structured in a way, even though it is... It is extremely structured. So in your brain, you're thinking, oh, I'm going a million miles an hour. I've got heaps going on. But if you do that enough, it gets to the point where it is just routine. And like you said, it's so hard to think up of anything new or just take a step back and have a look at things that may not be working well or even the things that are working well and actually like celebrate the small wins and stuff like that if you're constantly on the go.
Nick and I realized that, you know, we're a couple and we work together. And like for the first year and a half of going into business together, didn't have a date. Like didn't do anything that wasn't... like
business related.
Yeah, like our pillow talk was like BASS, like babe, have you filed your BASS, like, you know, just so, and then one day we were like, wow, this has gotten really bad. Like it's great to be able to work together, but we haven't done anything, we haven't had a holiday even when we did go away. It was like to look visit Stockers and like have meetings and you don't even realize that it's happening because you think that you're so passionate and that you're enjoying everything, but that you can always have too much of a good thing and you ruin the joy of it if you don't if you're not celebrating the wins and then reevaluating the losses, then like what's the point of it if you're just busy all the time. Another quote I love is, you can't do a good job if a good job is the only thing you do. Like what's the point of life? You know, you have to enjoy it and celebrate it, and it's just, what's the point if you're not in being a person outside of your work identity?
Yeah.
You have to have
that. And I was getting caught in the trap of being busy for the sake of being busy.
Totally.
Like having downtime and almost getting a little bit of anxiety and thinking like,
I should be
doing something. Yeah. I should be doing something, or I'm not working hard enough, blah, blah, blah. But yeah.
I think that's definitely right. A symptom of the fact that technology has made our pace of life really, really fast. Like it's increased, say, over like, you know, 500 times in the last whatever, but our bodies haven't improved by 500 times to be able to cope with it. So there's this massive lag between like our physical evolution and our digital evolution, which means that our bodies, like, they're not built yet to be able to cope with all the information and stimulus that we have.
Yeah.
And the side effect is lots of anxiety, lots of mental health issues, exhaustion, adrenal fatigue, but also just the fact that when we do chill out and like find our baseline again, most of us, if we go on holiday, the first week is spent just like getting used to being normal.
Yeah.
And that's not like, that's not a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, we think it's, you know, guilt about not working and whatever. Yeah. It's not guilt. I think it's just literally we're so G'd up and wired all the time.
Constantly, yeah. Yeah, it takes a while to actually
unwind.
Normalize feeling normal.
Yeah. And then when you do it and you come back, suddenly everything makes you anxious.
Yeah.
And you're like,
ugh. I think it's not till you come back that you actually realize that, you realize how much chaos it actually is when you are back.
Yeah, totally.
Like when I was, like we were speaking about this before, when I was away, like my productivity was huge, like such, like cortisol levels were so much lower, sleep was better, training was great, everything just kind of like settled down a bit. And then I still felt busy there, I still felt very productive, but then you come back and then you just like, after a week or two, you're like, holy shit,
everyone's insane. On steroids,
crazy. Like it's like, I have not thought, barely thought about my trip since I've been back, and it's already been 5 or 6 weeks.
And
it just feels just, like it's just non-stop,
you just straight back into it.
So it's definitely something I need to get better at.
Yeah.
So I want to just ask a couple more questions before we wrap things up. So what similarities do you see between running a successful business as an entrepreneur and living a healthy lifestyle and almost being the CEO of your own body?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Good one.
I love like that. Trademark that shit. I think goal setting and being self-driven towards that is really important. You know, in your own business, you have to be self-motivated. No one else is on your back telling you what to do. You don't have a boss and you don't have someone who pays the bill. You don't have someone who, like, will step in and pick up all the mess, you know, if you make mistakes and stuff. It's kind of the same with your fitness and health. You are the CEO of your own body, and no one else can teach you the lessons that you need to learn. No one else can crash for you and then learn that lesson. One else can, you know, can do that for you. No one else can tell you how you feel. One else can tell you. The most important thing I've learned over the past few years, I've tried, you know, so many different things moving into the health and wellness world, like the paleo diet, the blah blah blah, you know, we've got a vegan cafe, so going vegan, going non-vegan, going keto, going blah blah blah, doing like high intensity interval training, doing slow training, blah blah blah, and like no one can tell you what works for your body best. No one knows that, and it's the same with your business. No one knows your business like you. No one knows what your goals are, what your priorities are. Like, it's, I think self-management is the biggest skill that's like the same in both of them. Self-management, self-drive, discipline, and self-motivation. And the ability to, and self-awareness, the ability to like constantly evolve. Because again, like our bodies and our environments are changing all the time, so is business. Like, you need to be agile, and you need to be able to recognize when something's not working and very quickly nip it in the bud and like tailor that to...
And not be stuck in your ways of, of having one direction and just thinking that that's the only thing that's going
to
work.
Totally. Open-mindedness and like attentiveness to changing circumstances.
I think both come down to knowing your why.
Totally.
Like, business wise knowing your why is so important. Otherwise you're just doing it for to make money, which is never gonna last. And it's the same with your body. If you're coming in training a certain way because you think it's what you need to be doing, or it's the next best thing. Same with nutrition. If you're not enjoying it, you're never going to stick to it. It's never going to last. The results are never going to last.
Totally. And the big thing as well that I've had trouble with, not so much now, but first, in when I first changed from a rigid environment to business, is flexibility. You have to be able to, you know, take a rest day or go traveling, not have your normal workouts available and like switch it up. You have to be able to do that, and same in business. You have to be able to change to adapting circumstances when a competitor changes the landscape, or when, you know, we had a typhoon recently in Japan and like our tea farm got wiped out for a couple of weeks. You have to be able to be flexible and adaptable, and like I found that really hard with training because I was so used to routine. I was like, oh my god, what do I do when I'm not doing the same thing over and over? Like, I don't have a lunch break at exactly the same time. But you need to be open, and same with food, nutrition in particular. It's hard for people to be flexible because like we're so focused on, you know, gut health, but then macros, but then blah, and like our good fats and our bad fats. It's so hard. There's so much information, but just being flexible to like, I'm out at a birthday today, so I'm going to eat whatever's in front of me, or I'm traveling, so I'm going to eat this, and like, I think we all get stuck.
I think far too many people, especially nutrition wise, and we could talk about this all day.
I know.
either on or off. And that's something that I'm trying to really, the point I'm really trying to get across to people lately is that it shouldn't be an on or off switch.
Yeah.
It should be a way of eating that is just a way of eating. It's just like a lifestyle, and you're not on or off. It's just, you just eat.
Yeah. It's just like fuel. You treat it like fuel for your body. And I actually find it works for some people so well, and it comes back again to like what works for you. But I find that the whole eat healthy this many days of the week and then have a cheat day, that does not work for me.
No.
Like, that's an on-off
doesn't
approach.
Work for anyone.
And I mean, like, some people find it gives them more motivation to keep on track, but for me, it's like, I blow out then. Like, cheat
and
days,
I think
like,
even those people that say that it works for them, you typically find that they are in a very similar position
to
over
all of
a standard period of time. So I think it's more so the mental side of thing that works, or they think it work, it's working for them, but...
I find it way easier to not have an allocated day that's, you know, because otherwise I literally, that whole 24 hours just gorge. And then the rest of the week, like, be miserable about it.
Not healthy at all, no.
Yeah, it's so much easier to just be like, today I'm eating what I need to eat. And,
exactly.
You know, it's,
a lot less stress.
A lot less stress, it shouldn't be a stressful thing.
Should
I love
not be.
Food, it should be so enjoyable.
Enjoyable, yeah.
The best example you can possibly have is the Mediterranean, where they eat carbs and cheese. And are so long living, so healthy, so fit, slender. Like, I mean, not all of them, but.
And it's just, it's like, again, this is going to drag on.
Yeah, I know.
But like cortisol levels. Like I said, when I spend time overseas and I don't have a structure to be, you know, at this place at this time all day, every day. Like the last year when I was in the States, I was prepping for one of my bodybuilding shows. Before I went over, I was like, this is going to be hard. But it was so easy because I was eating the exact same amount as what I was before I left, and I was just losing body fat like so easily because my cortisol levels were so low. I just wasn't stressed. I wasn't overanalyzing everything, and
we're so much in our heads as well. Like
definitely.
I think it's a good thing that everyone is becoming more aware of wanting to do the right thing by their body.
Yeah.
But then there's so much conflicting information that we're bombarded with all the time.
Mm.
And we're lucky that we're in an industry where we're probably quite educated and have access to information and experts on nutrition and like sports science. But the everyday person is getting like Nine News and then like Pop Sugar and Daily Mail and like all this stuff that's just like, oh my God, the pyramid of food is just this weird kaleidoscope it's that nuts. I can't understand.
Yeah, it's nuts, isn't it? All right, last question before we wrap things up. Oh, it's not even a question, actually.
Oh.
You just mentioned that you started your podcast recently. Seize the Yay.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about that. Where can we find it? What's the concept behind it? And
So that came out of the idea that, you know, I've changed, like undergone a dramatic life change in a really short amount of time. It was like a 6-month turnaround without having any idea that it was coming beforehand.
Yeah.
And so I've just become really passionate about helping people find what I call it, like finding your yay, finding a life that makes you happy and that makes you joyful. And that, you know, I didn't even realize I was unhappy at the law firm. I don't even think I was unhappy. Yeah. I was just fine.
I think a lot of people are like that.
Yeah. And that's okay. But there's more than fine. You know, if you're having a bad time, you'll instigate change. But if you're okay, you'll just sit there forever and not know that there's so much more out there. You could be living a life it's just that you've that comfortable jumped feeling, out of isn't bed it? For. Yeah.
People just get too comfortable.
Yeah, so it's about, so seizing the day is obviously like getting out there, seizing, you know, opportunities and stuff. But yay brings in that childlike idea of joy and happiness and fulfillment and not looking at money or success, because I think that's separate to happiness and fulfillment. Yeah. So one of the things I love to talk about is, you know, we all say, hi, my name is blah, and this is what I do. But no one says who they are or what they like. It's always our output or our productivity or our job or our function. But what about our identity outside of work, you know? And what do you do for play? Like, you know, there's... So in each episode, there's way TA, so how did you get there? And nay TA, so all the shit behind the scenes that no one talks about that is involved in finding a life that you love. You know, there's so much crap behind the scenes. There's mental illness or, like, grief or struggle or, like, eating disorder, whatever it is. There's always stuff you don't know about because social media creates this, like, surface-level gloss.
Yeah.
Then there's play TA. So what activities do you do in your life that's not for output, that's not for any reason other than just, like, joy?
Joy,
Which is few and far between. Like, most people don't do anything for play. So trying to bring that concept back in. And just interviewing really interesting people and showing the person behind the 2D personality.
Yeah.
Chatting to them really openly about how they've found lives that make them happy and what that involved, and a lot of the nitty gritty, and trying to show, you know, that everyone who's been on so far has been so open with that's stuff cool. that, you know, you don't expect people to share. And it's just been amazing.
That's awesome.
And for myself as well, it's something that brings me so much joy that isn't, you know, output driven like our businesses.
Yep.
It's an outlet for me to just like play around with audio, and I've no, you know, we were talking before about we have no idea what the fuck we're doing.
Yeah.
And that's the best kind of hobby.
Yeah.
Is one that you don't have to be like the best, or you don't have to have metrics or success or whatever. It's just the fun just of learning something new.
The joy of it.
And again, we were in Tassie hiking up Cradle Mountain with no reception for a couple of days. And that's when this idea came up, was like, what's missing in my life?
Yeah.
Play and like something for fun that's not related to money or anything. And chatting to people in my network who are awesome. Podcast. Yeah. Hello.
How good.
Bought the stuff. Next episode was the first episode was out like a week later.
That's great. That's awesome. Again, taking action straight away.
That's
awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Sarah, thanks so much for coming on the show today. It's been a very enjoyable chat. I've had a great time.
Yeah, me too. Thank you for having me. And I'll have to get you on CCA.
Oh, that'd be great fun.
DK on CCA.
That's right. Guys, thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm sure you've taken a lot of value from it. I know I definitely have. So if you have enjoyed today's show, please do take a screenshot of the episode, post it up on Instagram story, tag myself, tag Sarah. Your Instagram tag is Spoonful of Sarah.
It is.
I'll make sure I have all Sarah's links to her social media and the website and everything in the show notes so you can check that out. But thanks again for tuning in. Make sure you hit that subscribe button if you haven't already, and look forward to chatting to you again in next week's episode.